My focus for today is what to do when you think that you can't. How do we overcome the barriers that hold us back? And I suppose that I would summarize my philosophy on this question with a quote from George Bernard Shaw. And he said, people are always blaming their circumstances for what they are. I don't believe in circumstances. The people who get on in this world are the people who get up and look for the circumstances they want. And if they can't find them, they make them. And I'm a huge believer in that philosophy. And I think it very much relates to the theme of this conference, which is all about the power of us. And I really believe that the remedy to the barriers that we experience in our careers actually lie within each of us. And we just have to believe in ourselves and our own instincts. Now, don't worry. Some of you may think that you may have inadvertently wandered into some sort of New Age ashram. And that any minute now, the incense is going to start to burn and, you know, the chimes are going to go. But I'm also a firm believer in demystifying this topic around career barriers. And what I want to leave you with is some really practical, tangible tips that I hope that you can take into your life or adapt to your circumstances. I should start with the obligatory health warnings. I don't have all the answers. I never will. But I believe that if we can share experiences in the spirit of the power of us, then there's a tremendous multiplying effect in sort of finding a way forward. And before every answer, there is a question. So I'm going to start off by asking you some questions. So I'd love it if you can respond with a show of hands. How many of you feel stuck in your careers? Okay. How many of you feel underappreciated in your jobs? Yep, pretty sizable. How many of you feel that there aren't opportunities for you? Okay. And how many of you feel overwhelmed and stressed out? I'm sorry, it had to go up. So, at various times in my life, I could have raised my hand to any one of those questions. In fact, I had a moment earlier this week, I have to confess, where I was kind of gnashing my teeth and muttering under my breath and sort of saying, why did I sign up to do this? And hopefully you're not all doing the same thing right now, because that would be really bad. But the voice in my head, the voice that was in my head was saying sort of, you know, what do you have to offer? Like, how are you qualified to give advice? And, you know, I've learned over trial and error not to listen to the inner mean girl, because, sidebar, she can be really mean. And rather than overthink, go at a challenge or a barrier one step at a time. I like to think it's the way that human beings are designed to move forward. How do we move forward? One step at a time. And guess what? The great thing about that, even if it is one step, and it can be slow, particularly with the kind of heels that I wear, you're still moving forward. So my plan today is to tell you a little bit about my career, how I overcame obstacles, and then I'm going to list out for you what my top 10 tips are for overcoming those barriers, and then I'd love to hear any of your questions. So first, a little bit about my own career history. I think it can be summed up in one word. It's not definitely not brilliant, trailblazing. It's unconventional. You know, if you told me when I was a sort of teenager, which was back when the Earth's crust was cooling, that I'd be in financial services, I would never have believed it, but trust me, neither would any of my math teachers. I was born in London, I was brought up in Scotland and Ireland, my father is an actor, and my mother was a literary agent, but she left her career when she married my father, one of five husbands, go mom. Hey, she used to say, darling, I'm a serial monogamist. So I was very privileged. I had an incredible upbringing. I was exposed to new ideas, to people and places at a very early age. And a guiding principle that our parents instilled in us was that we could do absolutely anything. When I was 10 years old, my family moved to Ireland, where I had the bulk of, and what would turn out to be my only education. I am an expert at crochet. I can make an apron. And I learned to type. And actually, that's no flies. Irish education today is some of the best in the world. But again, this was back in the dark ages. In my late teens, my family circumstance changed really dramatically through a mixture of divorce, illness, and a series of unfortunate events. I left school in the equivalent of 11th grade. And I think the privileged upbringing that I'd had vanished overnight, including having a roof over my head. And it isn't a particularly unique story, and the reason that I share it is that, you know, there's an urban legend, right, that says if you didn't go to the right school and then you didn't go to college, there's no way you're going to get a good job. Well, I don't think so. But at the time, trust me, I wasn't even concerned about that urban legend because I had it all figured out. I was going to be a famous actress. So, my career began in Lancaster, England, as, drumroll please, a waitress at Pizza Margherita. And yeah, I could have totally groused at Hollywood not finding me at the right time, but I think instead I thought, you know what, this is my business school, because how many people here have waited on tables or, right, you learn so much about people. You learn how to read people, instincts, and it also furnished me with the best advice that I can give my daughter, which is never, ever, ever marry a man who doesn't tip properly. Right? Because that's the worst thing in the world. So, you know, taking my parents' mantra to heart that I could do anything, how could I translate this into a career? So someone said I should try public relations, and I thought, why not? PR. What's not to like? And also, parenthetically, I don't know anything about PR. But I visited 10 PR agencies in the north of England, eventually landed in one, probably because they just wanted to shut me up. And in a short time, I was doing PR for world-leading brands like Kendall Mint Cake, which is a sugar-infused candy bar that climbers take to the top of Mount Everest. It's great for the ascent, but pretty bad for the dental bills afterwards. None of them ever smiled because they had no teeth. And then that led me to a venture capital firm in London, who I worked with. I did their PR, and then I set up my own PR firm, and we had a very diverse range of clients. We had a brand of goat cheese, we had an island off the west coast of Scotland, and what I'd say is, on the one hand, while I believed I could do everything, if you have this mindset, you have to accept that you're going to fail, and fail a lot, and I did spectacularly, because although I thought I could have my own business, I didn't know anything about managing people, about budgeting, so I was long on confidence, but short on some of the technical skills, and after 4 years, I just had to get out of there, and I moved to America because my mother was on her fifth husband, and I needed to supervise. So one of the things that I've always had in my career has been mentors. Because I didn't have conventional qualifications, I needed to have a sort of board of advisors, and I'll touch on that again shortly. And one of my mentors knew people in Boston. They hooked me up with a small company that did joint ventures with the UN and the World Bank. Cut a long story short, State Street was a major sponsor. Marsh Carter was CEO then. He wanted to have a third of the revenues at State Street come from outside the US. And I said, hello, international, moi. I know Europe. I can help. So I was offered a job in the international PR group. It was 15 years ago. I was 8 months pregnant with my daughter. My view of corporate America was, well, a Dilbert cartoon. I didn't think I'd fit in. But what I discovered was that State Street was incredibly entrepreneurial. It's truly a meritocracy. And yes, you have to push and you have to be willing to, you know, really sort of get outside of your comfort zone. But if you do, it can be an incredible experience. I'm amazingly lucky today to be chief marketing officer. One of the main reasons I'm lucky is I work with probably the most talented team in the industry, and we have a lot of fun. So what's not to like? How did I get there? I mean, I think it's back to that sort of taking one step at a time, one building block. And rather than seeing things as obstacles, I think I saw them as, how do I turn that into an opportunity? So I'm going to shift now and just sort of talk to you about my top 10 tips for how to overcome those obstacles in your career. So number 10 on my list is not going to be a surprise to anybody, but that is, believe that you can. You know, we are our own worst enemies, and we have plenty of excuses for why we can't do something. We're not qualified. We won't be given a chance. We're not worth it. But perception is not reality, and if we don't try, then how will we know? And what I say to people is, what's the worst thing that could happen, right? What's the worst thing that could happen? Somebody says no, but you've already imagined that scenario anyway, so you've got that done. So I say, ladies and gentlemen, please go for it. And, you know, I don't mean to be sexist here, but how many men have you heard say, oh, I don't think I have the confidence to do that. I don't think I could. Doesn't happen. So number 10 is believe. Number 9 on my list, and it's probably a little contradictory to number 10, but it's set realistic goals. So I'm a Capricorn. Is anyone else Capricorn in the room? Okay, are December babies? Because I think we're particularly strong Capricorns. Cloven hoofs. So I, typical Capricorn, my annual goals will sound something like lose 25 pounds, run marathon, publish great novel. Oops. And, you know, ambition and stretch is absolutely great, but maybe just pick one stretch goal, as opposed to them all being that way, because you always want to bake in some low-hanging fruit that you know that's attainable. So for me, rather than write the great novel, which, by the way, it will be a historical romance, it's going to be completely trashy, just the type of book that I like. It's what we call a pot boiler. But instead of trying to do that all at once, I try to dedicate 1 hour a month to creative writing. And then that's good, and I feel really good about it, right? Because success breeds success. Along those lines, number 8 on my list is think forward, not back. Yes, we absolutely can learn from the past. And the experiences we've gone through shape who we are today. But they don't define us, and to dwell in the past and things that have happened to you that are negative will keep you completely in the past tense. You know, and missteps, failure, they're a natural consequence of my go for it tip. But when, you know, failure happens, I have a 3-step remedy. One is embrace it. Own it. You know, in America, we're so encouraged, you know, to talk about success. People don't like to talk about failure. But I think it's really important to embrace it, to learn from it, and then to move on. So number 7 on my list is another point around resisting the impulse to be negative. And I had a great friend and mentor in my life whose name was Nerida Piggin. And she was Australian, and she described herself as an international fashion model and diplomat. And I love the diplomat piece. And just a bit of royal gossip here, but she was sort of, you know, rumor had it, she and Prince Charles, I'm just saying. So it's just fascinating. And her words resonate with me. And she would say to me, you know what, Hannah, we're here for a good time, not a long time. I was like, okay, Nerida. Because, yeah, life is really hard and there will always be challenges. But let's try to practice the glass being half full rather than being half empty. Like, optimism is an incredible driver, an incredible propellant. And, you know, as I've grown older, do you want to be surrounded by positive people or negative people. And you know, I know what I choose. And in time, I've edited the negative people out of my life. I'm sorry to my mother-in-law. Whoops, I shouldn't have said that. Okay. Along those lines, number 6 on my list is choose your distractions. Now, when I grew up, admittedly, with the dinosaurs, like literally we had a rotary phone. I may have to draw a picture for most of you in the room. And we had a 3-digit phone number. My phone number was Fromoy 215. And no TV. But today the distractions and the diversions are overwhelming, and it's further compounded by 24/7 breaking news and news alert, and everyone wants to sort of push stuff to you. And I say, does the world really need another selfie, or, sorry to my brilliant social media team who are here, like another tweet? I kind of say hashtag no. But also, I think the time suck is just extraordinary. And we find ourselves, you know, they're saying that adults are getting diagnosed with ADD at an incredible rate. And I'm kind of saying, take the devices away. Take the distractions away, because then how can you focus on yourself? How can you carve out time to really think about how you're going to develop? And you know what? The world will go on. We don't need to know what Kim Kardashian is wearing. It's okay. Now, there's one exception to this rule, and that is that State Street is a huge partner of TED. TED is an amazing forum for the most innovative thinking and ideas. And go on TED.com if you want to have your brain stimulated, because it's some of the most amazing talks. In fact, Susan Cain, who spoke this morning, is an amazing TED speaker. Number 6 relates to all the time you're going to have when you... Oh, well done. See? That's why my math teachers didn't... you need to know and communicate your value proposition. Communication is a really important concept, and LOL is not a sentence. But it's also vital for our careers that we can relate to people and talk to people, and that means listening. So I'm in a fortunate position where I get to meet a lot of people who come to me for sort of informational interviews, and I'm always amazed because, one, do they draw breath? Because it just seems to be this constant barrage. But two, they always talk about themselves. And what we need to learn and cultivate is a way to listen to people, to read people, and ask questions that enable us to demonstrate how we're going to solve someone's problem, how we can help a company. Because that's the true essence of value proposition. And the other thing that we need in order to do that is, if you're stuck in your career, I've always relied on this board of directors. I have 4 or 5 people in my life who I know will tell me the honest truth. And trust me, I mean, I don't like to hear the honest truth, which is often, you know, you need to get a grip, you need to slow down, you need to listen better to people, but it's really important to have people in your life that will give you an honest read. The next tip on my list is something actually that Eve and I were talking about before we got started, which is you need to follow your passion, not what you think you should do. Because newsflash, hard work does not always equate happiness. And to stay engaged, you really have to love what you do. And if you ever doubt the validity of this, then remember the words of Nerida, and that you're here for a good time, not a long time, and think about how you want to look back on your career and your life's work. In this vein, next on my list is you have to maintain balance. It can't be all about work. And maybe it isn't realistic that you can sort of 100% nail your passion there, but you can ensure in your personal life that you pursue a passion. And it's why it's so important to invest in friends and family. And giving back, which is a theme of this conference, is another really critical aspect here. I'm fortunate enough to serve on the board of the amazing, the Women's Lunch Place. If you don't know about it, go to their website, womenslunchplace.org. Probably the most humbling and incredible organization where we empower women and children daily by feeding them and giving them back dignity. And having that piece of my life, just it's been like a missing jigsaw puzzle. And in fact, their executive director is here with us, so you can and her fabulous team. So if anyone wants to hear more, catch them afterwards. So then, in the theme of giving back, now I've lost my count because someone was definitely keeping track of the math because I thought I was a number three, but I'm 2.5 because I'm really going for it. It's something that I find myself saying to my beloved 15-year-old daughter on a regular basis, and that is a little less attitude, a little more gratitude. And it links to my earlier points around resisting negativity and the downward spiral. You know, rather than resent what hasn't happened in your career, here's an idea: embrace the things that have gone well and really appreciate them. You know, you want to be promoted? First, demonstrate that you really appreciate the opportunity that you have and make the most of it. Next on my list, completely different, but something that I really take to heart, and that is never take yourself too seriously. So when you get to my advanced age and you have a title like EVP and a chief something before your title, you can think you're pretty special. I have a big office, it has windows, my chair swirls round and round. And anybody remember that scene in Working Girl? I think it was Melanie Griffith when she finally, I feel like that every day, but I can't let on because I've got to be really serious. But you can't let your career consume your whole identity because guess what? One day it will go away. The way that jobs work in America today, careers work, it'll be a series, you know, it'll constantly turn over. And if you define yourself by your job and your job goes away, you need to be sure that you know who you are and that you have a life beyond that. So I suppose last thing I would say on this topic is that you also need to embrace that life is a journey. It sounds like a cliche, but you're never going to stop experiencing. You're never going to stop learning. And in fact, the moment you do, you're kind of in trouble. And I think the power of us is that we can tackle anything when we put our minds to it. And we have to be willing to look at every obstacle as an opportunity. And that's how I've sort of propelled what has been a rather unconventional career forward. But hopefully there's something in there that everyone can take away. So I really thank you so much for listening. And I'd be delighted to take questions. And there's microphones. Yes, Eve, do you mind going to the microphone? Brilliant.
Thank you.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I think that I may challenge, my math teacher may challenge my ability as much as your math teacher challenged yours. In, you know, recognizing oneself as a business person, I have often felt that my inability to sort of see, numbers don't talk to me.
Yeah.
Other things do, and I've been very successful, but there's that piece that I always feel I'm not a real business person.
Yeah.
Because when you sit in a corporate office with people that we both know, and they just talk numbers and numbers talk, and I'm much more about the interpersonal. I'm wondering how you've dealt with that as you've managed a big team and if that became an issue for you and how you overcame it.
Yeah, Eve, it's a great question because as clearly I can't even count down backwards. And it's a real problem for me. And here I am in financial services. So there's two things I've done to overcome it. I have lots of wonderful colleagues who know a lot about numbers and finance. And I've learned to ask questions because I used to sit in these meetings and I would hear terms like, and you know, Caroline, who's in the front row, who is a finance guru, will probably start laughing because I'd hear about ROE and EPS and I'd be like, huh? And I thought, well, I can't possibly. And I'd, in my head, I'd be thinking, what does this stand for? But then I got a friend like Caroline who I knew I could kind of kidnap and sit down and say, okay, just explain the basics, blank sheet of paper. Help me understand this. So that was first. The second piece is, at the risk of horrifying Elizabeth and her team, for me getting on a nonprofit board, I immediately, when I first joined the board, asked to do finance duty. Because, not because I thought I could mess around and the risk would be low, but I knew that I would be able to ask a lot more questions than I'd feel comfortable, perhaps in my, quote, professional life. So it was a great way to test it out. And the minute you demystify it, it felt great. So two tricks of the trade. I still hate numbers. Yes.
Hello, my name's Eileen.
Hi.
I have a question. You talked about turning failure into opportunity. Can you give an example of where that actually happened and how you turned that failure into an opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think, the example, and I probably didn't describe it well enough, but when I, when I had my own company, it ended quite spectacularly because I was so bad at it. And I think that, you know, someone said to me, and it, one door closes, another door opens, and I decided to adopt that mind shift as sort of what did I learn, what could I take away, and then it really gave me the space to sort of think. So when I looked back, the things that I didn't do well were probably things that I didn't like anyway and I shouldn't have been messing around in. So I think the opportunity was that when I went to find another career, I had a lot more clarity about where I should go. Because, in my head I thought, I want to own my own business, And it ended up not being the right thing for me. So the opportunity was sort of eye-opening. I think the other piece is my State Street colleagues, about 5 or 6 years ago, we decided to completely overhaul our intranet because at the time the cafeteria menu had been the most used page. And I thought maybe that wasn't a great way to communicate. And so we designed an incredible website that would almost make you a cup of coffee. But the problem was it was way too complicated. And when we launched it, it didn't get the traction. And I think we really learned from that and learned what do employees really want rather than what do we imagine employees want. And in fact, what we discovered is with social media, we needed something more like Facebook at State Street. And in fact, thanks to the incredible, talented team who's here with me, we're going to launch that next month, which is really exciting. So two examples.
Thank you.
We're going to go to this side. I'm going to toggle between sides.
Yes, my name is Denise, and I'm a home-based entrepreneur. And my question is kind of setting priorities. I am a very good helper, and everyone comes to me, and I have a hard time establishing boundaries and concentrating on what I need to be doing. So I was wondering if you had any insight into that.
I do. The most important word I learned, and it took me a long time in my career, is no. No, 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 no. Because I like to help people. I genuinely do. And, if you're that type of person, all of a sudden it's the slow creep and crawl, and can you take on this and can you take on that? And I really got very kind of black and white about it, and I learned to say no, and say no graciously, say no with a smile. And then I also make sure that I really balance my time with prioritizing the things that I want to get done. But I think no is critical. I have a T-shirt that says it, too. I'll lend it to you. Yes.
Hello.
Hi.
You had talked a little bit about your board.
Yeah.
And I think of it as building your team or having a team behind you. And I'd like to hear more about how you go about building that team or how you focus on that or what the requirements of those different people might be.
Yeah, no, thank you. So I think it's I'd love to take credit that I was incredibly planful about it at the beginning because I mentioned I'd had mentors and advisors, And I make sure that I stay in touch and that I always say thank you, because that's really important. But then the other thing that I've done is that when I look at the demographics of my board today, I have quite a few people who are younger than me. I have a couple of sort of what I would call the sort of elder states people who've done it all and been through it and can sort of lend me that perspective. And then I have quite a lot of contemporaries. And for me, the most important quality and the reason that I force myself to be drawn to them is that I know that they will always tell me the truth. And in fact, you know, many of the people on my board become really close friends because, you know, that bond of trust. But to me, the definition of a close friend is that, you know, they'll kind of tell it like it is. But I think in order to keep your board of directors active, you've got to nurture it, you've got to communicate with them. You've got to be very careful so it's not just like the worst thing that can happen is to go silent and then sort of 6 months call up and you have this like big ask. You know, I'm constantly in touch with people and bouncing ideas off because I know that I don't have the best ideas. You know, they come from a diversity of thinkers. So I think the demographic, having the right sort of mix, is really critical.
Hi, Hannah. So I just wanted to see if we could draw a little bit from your personal experience in your career. And if there has ever been a moment in your career where you felt like you were part of a big boys club, and if you ever faced a challenge and how you handled it in that sense.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. I actually, sometimes I feel it daily, to be completely honest, but the most important thing is to have a good sense of humor about it. I remember I'd been promoted to vice president, which, you know, is a big deal at State Street, and I was at a conference overseas, and someone handed me their plate. I was like, wow. But then I thought, you know, I can do one of two things. I can take the plate and break it over their head. But I can just take it and, like, let it run off my back. And I did that. And I take great comfort from the amazing women who have really sort of blazed a trail. And I think the reason they've blazed a trail is they don't think in terms of gender. They think in terms of ability. And the minute... the minute I start thinking about the whole sort of boys club, I get a little sucked into a spiral, and instead I think about the amazing girls club that I belong to and my network and my power. You heard Alison Quirk today, who's just incredible and really a leading light for us at State Street. A friend of mine, Pat Parslin, has just come into the room, who's been a real trailblazer. She's a dear friend of mine, but she's also really moved the needle for women. And I think rather than worry about the boys that hand me the plate, I'd rather look at the women who are just breaking their way through the glass ceiling. So,
thank you.
Hey, thank you.
Hi, my name is Molly.
Hi, Molly.
I know at the beginning you said you try to be really optimistic and look at things more half full.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering at the beginning when you started out, if you were ever like scared or overwhelmed, how did you get over it?
Absolutely. And yes, I mean, I'm not going to pretend to you that, like, you know, Julie Andrews and The Sound of Music, I spent, you know, my youth skipping over the fields. You know, there were many days, you know, curled up in the fetal position, rocking back and forth, but because you have to cry sometimes and you have to feel it. But I think what I realized is, and this is no great sort of insight, but I realized that I had to sort of pick myself up because no one else is going to do it. And I think I just always try to sort of think in the positive. And, you know, there has to be a reason, because just getting sucked into, you know, the negativity, I mean, you know, it's not great. And, you know, my wonderful friends and colleagues can attest to this. I mean, you know, I experienced a degree of homelessness for like 6 months. But, I mean, many of our guests at the Women's Lunch Place, unfortunately, that's like a life. And yet, you go to the Women's Lunch Place and you meet the most energized, amazing women you will ever meet in your life, because I don't think they dwell in that at all. They're incredibly grateful for what they have today. And the way I translate that into the corporate world is that it's sort of what I said. I hear so many people come into my office, you know, and have a good wine and have a moan about why something hasn't happened. And I just think you gotta shift the mindset. And often the reason something hasn't happened is because you haven't asked for it. And so I think just sort of finding that right balance is really critical. But yeah, I mean, trust me, my husband will tell you, there are many days when I not necessarily upbeat, but just finding a balance.
Hi, my name is Shelley. I'm actually a mother of two very young children, and I've had a very fruitful career throughout my 20s.
Yeah.
Now I'm in my late 30s, and I'm starting to try to get back into being the career woman. I have a wonderful job at a wonderful company. I couldn't ask for more, but I would like to see if you can maybe provide some tips on how to get me propelled back into that world where I can really go get it. And my husband is the constant reminder of, you really are down on yourself too much. You really have a lot more to give. I know that. It's just, I need that oomph. And I have it. I just need some words of wisdom to get it back.
I don't know that I have words of wisdom, because I suppose I have a slightly alternate view. You have a job that you love, a wonderful job, and you have two daughters. And I'm thinking, what's not to like? And I'm thinking, why do you want to propel yourself more? But I think we have this conception. You know, I think particularly for working mothers, there's this sense that we have to do it all. We have to be fabulous at work. We have to be go-getters, and we have to be amazing parents. And I'm sorry, I actually don't think it's possible. And I'm not sure that's a goal that we should really necessarily go after. Your daughters are young, two girls, right?
Boy,
right. So they're, yeah, and you know, they probably need you a lot right now. And you know what? That's fabulous, because having a family is so important in that those sort of early years. And I think that I have to admit, I mentioned that I joined State Street when I was 8 months pregnant, and I think another failure, perhaps, when I look back, one of the things that I regret the most is that I sort of had your mindset, I think, of I need to go for it, I need to get back in there. And I missed a lot of my daughter's early years, and I think, that's time that I'll never get back. And when I think about what's really important to me, final analysis, it's her. So I think you're clearly on the right path. You definitely shouldn't be down on yourself. You've got a wonderful job, wonderful family. And I think just see where the journey takes you. And don't push yourself too much, because where you are today sounds like it's fabulous. Yes.
Hi, my name is Amy, and I was just wondering, I'm at a precipice of change and in the process of looking for that next opportunity, but I feel like I'm almost paralyzed by the different passions that I have and trying to figure out which one to follow or what that next choice is. And I was wondering if you had any advice for how do you take that next step or figure out what the correct passion is for that next step?
Yeah, it's interesting that you said precipice, because that to me says like fear, because And I think, honestly, I mean, again, it's going to sound like, okay, thank you for that incredibly searing wisdom, Hannah. But I think it's just like, make a choice, like pick one of them. And it might not be the one in your heart that you absolutely think, but if you've got a lot of things swirling in your head, just land on one, go for it. Because again, if it doesn't work out, not the worst thing in the world, but at least you're then winnowing out the things that don't work for you. But to be paralyzed, and we all get to that point where like, okay, overload, just eyes forward, move forward. So pick one, and if you can't, stay a while and we'll all pick one for you. Board of directors. Yes.
Hi, my name is Dil Shoda. I was wondering if you, so in your career, you started your own company, so it was smaller. You worked for a large corporation like State Street. You waited tables, that I guess is smaller too. So when you were going between these organizations, did your style in the workplace change? Did you feel like you had to adapt? And if so, do you have any tips?
Yes, I mean, I think in one sense, if there was a common thread, and I mentioned this, I think maybe there's a little entrepreneurialism and a little bit of reading people that would be the common thread throughout all the roles that I've had. Having said that, you absolutely need to be able to adapt, just a little bit. I mean, you know, I would never, you know, you sort of corporate America, perhaps there's a sort of, you know, style or, you know, formality. Well, that's just never going to be me. And I never want to sort of subjugate that part of my personality. But it was interesting, about 4 years ago, somebody said to me, you know, you tell too many jokes in a corporate environment. I'm like, me? Moi? I'm a laugh riot. People love it. And they're like, no, they don't. They're just being polite. I was like, okay, wow, good to know. But because maybe I needed to temper that a little bit, because you don't want to be the sort of funny ha-ha girl. And I had to learn just to sort of restrain it, you know, wait till I get home. So I think there's subtle adjustments, but never completely subjugate who you are. Yes,
hi,
Linda.
Wow, this is awesome. Listening to you, I'm a staff member at Women's Lunch Place.
An incredible staff member.
But before I became a staff member, I too was homeless, yeah, and strung out. And I was a guest at Women's Lunch Place. And coming through those doors and getting the love, the unconditional love, really changed my life.
Yeah.
And now I've been there 14 years. But listening to you and your humble story, I'm 61 and I had a fear of going back to school.
Yeah.
But coming to this conference and listening to you, I'm going back to school.
Yay! She is incredible. And not only should you go back to school, but you need to bottle your secret for eternal youth. Because does anybody believe that this beautiful woman, I mean, unbelievable, unbelievable. You're amazing. Okay, last question.
Hi, I'm Annie from State Street as well. I don't think I can beat that comment, but I have a question for you. You started off this conversation saying your career path is unconventional.
Yes.
So I wanted to ask you if you ever felt, given your education background and your career switches, did you ever feel uncomfortable? And how do you stay confident and comfortable throughout all the path and feel like you are on par with everyone else around you?
Yes, I felt uncomfortable. And I think particularly in America, where education is so important, and trust me, I don't suggest an unconventional route for my daughter. So I'm like, okay, you have the opportunity. I want you to go for it. So I think I've had to work doubly hard. You know, I've tried to read every book I can. But where I missed out is the network. So many people here have a network that comes from college, and I really don't have that. So I think I've had to work very hard at building my own network. And yes, you know, some people can make you feel a smidge inferior. I mean, you know, but I just refuse to let that happen, you know, because I've got better shoes. Right? Yes. Yeah, I think we have time. This fabulous lady.
How are you, Hannah? My name is Carla. And I'm just wondering, can you tell me about the toughest career decision that you've had to make?
Yeah, Carla, that's a great question. It was actually going to State Street because, you know, I'd worked in these smaller companies and in a very entrepreneurial environment, and I was incredibly trepidatious about going into a large corporate. I mean, we're 30,000 employees globally, you know, a 31 billion market cap, terrifying, and also going in pregnant. And I think I was worried that I just get sort of sucked in. And in fact, my first day at work, we went to, you have to be fingerprinted. And I remember going into the fingerprint room and then calling my husband from a then payphone to say, you know, I've made the worst mistake of my life, you know, pregnancy hormones. And but it was just really tough because I had a lot of autonomy and I really wondered whether or not I'd be able to keep that up because, you know, corporate hierarchy can be very confining. But I just figured, you know, I'd give it a chance and I'd take it sort of one step at a time. And it was a choice that I made, and let's just see where it went. And I learned how to adjust, and I also kind of maybe made them adjust a little bit to me, and, you know, it all worked out. But it was very tough to give up that independence. So thank you so much for listening to me. I really appreciate it. Thank you.